This episode of Standard Orbit is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for iPhone, iPad, iPod, Android, Kindle, Windows Phone, plus Mac or PC. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm.
Hey everyone, I'm Rod Roddenberry, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Follow Standard Orbit, Mr. Chekhov, and take us home.
I say.
You will obey. It is the word of Landru.
Joy to you, friends. Welcome to Standard Orbit, Trek FM's dedicated show about the original Star Trek series. This is a show where we dive into the characters, concepts, cliches, and other things that don't start with C about the original series. My name is Drew, or Landru. I'm the TOS editor for the network, and with me today is my co-host Mike from Commentary Track Stars.
Hey, how's it going?
It's fantastic. And we actually have the crew of Trek FM's dedicated Next Generation show, Earl Grey. We have Philip Gilfus.
Hello.
Darren Mosier.
Hello.
And Daniel Prue.
Hi, everyone.
This week we're going to cover a C that will transcend podcast boundaries, a crossover. The topic will be the seventh Star Trek feature film, Generations, where some of the TOS crew passed the torch into the Next Generation crew after they were on the air for 7 years. This will be a two-parter. The first part will be on this show, where we're going to try to cover the movie from a TOS point of view. And the second part will be on tomorrow's Earl Grey, where we'll come at it from a TNG point of view.
I would like to say that I am drinking Earl Grey, but I have it in my screen accurate NCC 1701A mug. All right.
No, there's no bloody A, B, C, or D.
But there is a D in this.
And a B.
There's a B and a D.
Yes, that's true.
Let's just not talk about it.
Here we are.
No, that's what we're going to talk about.
That's the whole point of being here, Daniel.
I was talking about the B. Okay,
he was just here to talk about nacelles.
Before we get into that, we figure, especially since we're going to have a lot less to talk about, the idea behind this was on our show, we're going to look at it from the original series perspective, and then on your show, we'll look at it from the Next Generation perspective. And since there's a lot more Next Generation than original series in this, we figured also probably a good idea to start off this show by getting people's general thoughts on Generations. So who wants to start?
I'll start.
Darren.
Yeah. All right.
You blinked.
I blinked. It was lag, I swear. I didn't blink. No, I remember when Generations came out, and my initial reaction on this film is it's not my favorite Next Gen film, but when it came out, little Darren just ate it up because it was Captain Picard and the Enterprise D on the big screen. And I remember they had that crazy different logo with the weird, you know, Starfleet symbol. Cause you know, let's just change things. Cause apparently, you know, it's not good enough as it is. And I remember it just flying in the trailer and like, you know, exploding and awesomeness and all that reused footage of that Klingon bird of prey. But I remember seeing this in theaters with my father, and it was just such a peak of Star Trek. As many people have said before, the mid-90s really was the highlight of, you know, of prime universe Trek for sure. And so again, not my favorite film, but it definitely has a place in my heart from the history aspect of Star Trek.
How about you, Phil?
Yeah, with Generations, you know, it was one of those things where I actually did. This is the only Star Trek film of the Next Generation that I did not see in the theaters. So I guess I just couldn't. I'd never thought about bugging my parents enough to take me. You know, it's interesting to obviously seen it over the years, and you know, I think a lot of people will say, "Oh, it's horrible," and I don't really think anyone says it's you know the greatest, but I as always I find the middle ground, and having watched it recently, you know, today to get ready for this, you know, it's painful in a lot of ways, because, and I know we'll talk about kind of the different challenges and the plot and the writing that I'm like, oh, you could, no, that's the, no, with the, ugh. But anyway, but it, nevertheless, I mean, look, you have great TOS elements and great Next Generation elements, which we'll talk about. And just like Darren said, hey, it's Next Generation on the big screen, which is always has to be good. Well, except for Nemesis. But anyway, but I think it depends on what we can find in Generations. Like, for instance, you know, whether it's on one hand, it's hard for me to watch because this is like not the Next Generation crew at their best. Both, and I know we'll talk about it on Earl Grey, but both Picard and Data are both disabled throughout this movie. So it's hard for me to look, oh, they're not at their best. But on the second hand, with Kirk and with the Nexus and everything and the Next Generation elements, I wonder, like, is there symbolism in this? Is this like a movie about loss and change and transition? And so I try to, like, figure out, you know, maybe there's some symbolism here I can find that will give me some value. So hopefully talking today and talking tomorrow, I can maybe find some good symbolism to give this movie a little bit more meaning than just like, I wish our first effort was better on the big screen.
How about you, Daniel?
Oh, it's rough. I watched the film last night, and I think Generations is probably the best really flawed Star Trek film. And when I say really flawed, I put, and this is my personal view, but I would put the motion picture Five and Insurrection in those categories as well. And it's like, it's the easiest to watch of those for me. Like, I can still enjoy watching this film, even though it has massive shortcomings and really big problems. And I don't know exactly what it is. I think probably a lot of it is that it's set on the Enterprise D, and it's right after All Good Things. And so it's riding that really, you know, that wave of good feelings, you know, for all of the big TNG people. But just watching it and going through it, it's just like, it physically hurts me. It kills me to watch this movie because I'm like, this could have been really incredible. This could have been awesome. And it wasn't, unfortunately. That's not what we got. So I can watch and enjoy it, but I do have a lot of problems with the film.
How about you, Drew?
Well, I'm just glad that I'm not alone in my not really caring for this movie. Like, I was afraid, like, you know, Next Generation crew here, that I would be in the minority. But it's not a bad film. Like, and I agree, it's, you know, I'd rather watch it than Motion Picture. But there's so many problems. Like, I don't expect every TV movie based on TV to be like Serenity, where they reintroduce you to the characters and stuff. But for new people, like, I tried to watch it this most recent time as someone who'd only seen TOS, and it doesn't introduce you to the characters very well, and they're not at their best. Their ship gets shot at twice and then explodes. Like, it's not a shining example of TNG. I think that with some rewrites, they could have taken that plot and not have the crossover stuff, and it would have been a really good movie about time and growing old and, you know, dealing with emotions and all the good stuff, like in those three scenes where it actually is there. If they had, like, focused on that, I think it would have been really great. But as it is, it's very flawed.
Okay, well, for me, I think I'm more along the lines of Darren. I'm probably even more so. I cannot see the forest through the trees when it comes to this movie. And a lot of it has to do with the place that I was at when it came out and everything. I mean, I was, you know, 14 years old, and had just been, I was hardcore into Star Trek, like really, really hardcore. And I had never seen any of these movies on the big screen, and I had never really cared about watching movies. And this was the first movie that I ever actively anticipated, and I went to the preview screening the night before it came out and all that good stuff, and it blew me away. It made me not only love Star Trek more, but more importantly than that, made me love movies, made me love the theatrical experience. And I mean, hey, you know, I sort of made a career out of that. I've been a projectionist for years, and a lot of that has to do with this movie. So, I mean, is it flawed? I mean, yeah, I can point out the flaws in it. I don't think it's nearly as bad as most people do. I think it's actually quite good. In fact, you know, I've gone on record as saying that it's better than All Good Things. And I agree, and I still stand by that. But, yeah, I know. Look at all the gas.
I can't Leave it.
How do we talk to him?
That was a great time being
okay?
on Standard Orbit today.
I like how you covered your ears, Philip, over your earbuds, so thereby not actually blocking out anything.
I was trying to get the hear no, see no.
But you know what? That's my personal feeling on it. I do love this movie. You know, I mean, I think a lot about, like, you know, movies, and I spend so much time, you know, like, analyzing them and saying, like, is this movie good? Is this movie bad? And sometimes you forget that, like, the point of movies is to make an impact on you as a person. And this movie, for whatever reasons, and sure, there are lurking variables, but this movie made more of an impact on me than almost any other movie ever in my life. So for that, I gotta say, I love it.
So to start the TOS-centric part, we'll start as the movie does, with in TOS, sometime after Star Trek VI, and they retire the Enterprise A for no good reason. They claim that it's like 30 years old, but they really just built it like, you know, 5 years previous.
Do they claim that it's 30 years old?
Yeah.
Well, when? I think they say that it's the first time that a ship called Enterprise has been capped in 30 years.
Without James T. Kirk.
James T. Kirk.
No, I'm talking Star Trek VI.
They don't decommission. They say return for, because we're to be decommissioned. They don't say how long it's been. And yeah, in this movie, they say it's the first time in 30 years that a ship has been captained by someone other than James T. Kirk. That's just because he was captain for 30 years. But even though that's not true.
I was going to say, isn't that untrue?
Wasn't Decker, Spock.
Yeah. What can you do?
Well, they only lasted one mission. Decker barely lasted his mission. I mean, he didn't last the end of it.
So
Decker probably
was that
count.
Training mission yeah. for 5 minutes.
Wasn't there strains of the motion picture with, you know, the motion picture you had, like, you know, Kirk barreling in and Decker, you know, get out of here, I'm in charge now, I'm getting in the chair. And I felt like watching Generations again, I almost got that feeling again of, like, can Kirk just not, like, be a guest? Does he have problems? Just, you know, is there something wrong with his chair?
No. But see, there's growth there, because in the first one, in you know, motion picture, the whole thing is like he can't let go. He needs to be that captain. He's going to push this guy aside and say, he's saying, I'm the one who's in charge because I've always been the one who's in charge. Whereas here, you know, the guy from Ferris Bueller. Like
Captain Harriman.
Yeah, he's like, I'm going to go down and fix the deflector or whatever he was doing. And Kirk sits down in the chair, and then he's like, no, this is wrong. You're the captain. You belong in this chair. I'm going to go fix that thing. So he is the hero, but he's not the captain.
To be fair, though, I mean, you're right, and I'm not trying to argue that point with you, but there is, like, he's being as obnoxious about it as possible. Like, before Harriman asks him for advice, he's, like, wiping the dust off the consoles and, like, trying to edge closer to the seat, like,
he's
here to help.
Coughing, you know? Coughing awkwardly, like, tractor beam.
But I mean, it's truly, I mean, I've definitely been in that position before where it's like, it's not your place to do something. And yet you know exactly what needs to be done because you are way more qualified than the person who's trying to do this. And you just want to be like, dude. And when there's lives on the line, I imagine it's really tough, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it was almost like a passing of the torch. I mean, It was a passing of the torch there between the, you know, the A and the B, which obviously leads into the Kirk and Picard transition too. And so, like I said, I wonder if there, and I'm trying to force an analogy here in the movie, maybe it's too forced, about this whole movie is about transition and loss, but good things can come through loss. And so, you know, we all kind of make fun of, oh, Captain Harriman, he's terrible, how'd he get to be captain? But, like, that's the point, you know, that he's supposed to be terrible just so we have that contrast with Kirk. And, you know, what does that mean when you have to allow the next generation, if you will, to come?
Does anybody know, like, are we ever told, like, even through books or anything, excuse my ignorance if I'm the only one that is not aware of this, but do we know anything about him afterwards, after this movie? Like,
I'm actually interested in Harriman. I read a couple books with
and
him
comics too.
Yeah, and his dad supposedly is like some admiral who got him the job. You know, so he really is unqualified, but he, you know, grows into the position. the book I read, I forget what it was called, but it had to do with the Tomed incident.
I remember it too, because it was about he and Chekhov got into some fight or something, and I can't remember.
Yeah. And it led into the Tomed incident that they reference, you know, the Romulan episodes in your series talk about.
Well, wasn't there...
It has a name.
Well, wasn't the actor... Didn't he reprise the role for the fan film in
He was in Gods of Men.
Yeah. You know, adds a little bit of gray to the goatee and, you know, boom, instant reprisal. But I thought we were going to spend, you know, 5 minutes talking about when, how many minutes into the episode, into the movie it was when we finally realized what the heck that bottle was floating through the space, because it literally took me like 10 minutes. I'm like, what am I watching? And then it smacked into
I think that was one of those things where my dad had seen it first. I don't think I saw it in theaters. So like my dad's shown it to me on tape and he's like, it's a wine bottle. I'm like, oh, thanks, Dad. Because what he's like.
Oh, and Kirk dies, by the way.
but that is a weird thing, you know, like back in 1994, I'm pretty convinced the world did not care about spoilers. I mean, one of the things that I do on my other show is every week we read articles from Cinescape magazines from the mid-90s, and nobody cared about spoilers, no one, you know. And I remember as a kid, like 1994, for that year leading up to the movie, like my mission in life was to find out as much as I possibly could about this movie. So I knew that Kirk died, spoilers. I knew that the Enterprise crashed. I knew everything about this movie, every single little detail, including the wine bottle. I knew the scene that we weren't seeing first.
Technically, it's a champagne bottle.
That's true. It is.
My only regret is that it's not Chateau Picard.
I was thinking the same thing. I'm so glad you brought that up.
You guys are kidding, right?
No, why not?
Champagne. You use champagne.
It is Chateau Picard.
No, it's Dom Perignon.
No, it's Dom Perignon. Yeah.
Are you sure?
Yeah. No, I'm pretty sure.
No,
the internet would have
you're going to make me.
Have you ever even seen a Star Trek movie? No.
Wait. You're going to make me go and get my Blu-ray right now. And
I watched it last night. I kept an eye on it three hours ago.
It was 22. I can even remember the vintage. It was like 22, 36, 46, something like that.
I swear to God, it said Chateau Picard.
The remastered version? Were they?
No. I remember
where George Lucas added Chateau Picard. No,
Dave Rossi fixed it.
Oh my! You're shattering. No, I am. I'm gonna check this thing in between episodes here. I swear to God.
I was so upset, just like he was, because I was watching last night, and I'm like.
Perhaps it was in the novelization. Is it Chateau Picard? I swear to God, if it's the first ten pages
of the book, just and the bottle turned and it turns more.
It's a flip book. The book is a flip book in the beginning, and it's just Chateau Picard. You know?
If it's not Chateau Picard, then like I don't know. I am seriously going to question my reality.
Any memory at all. It's like,
yeah, I mean,
man, wasn't
Spock
great in this? Oh wait, he wasn't.
Yeah. I did want to bring that up, though, while Darren's going through that. I understand, and it makes sense. I wouldn't want to be in this movie either, just as a cameo appearance. But in-universe, it's really disappointing that Kirk is incomplete in his last moments in the prime timeline. Because does anybody know that he dies in the future?
Some are still around.
People do know that he dies in the future. You're saying like on this mission?
In 24th century?
Right. No. I mean like on Viridian 3, do people know that he's buried under a bunch of rocks?
I think Picard kept it quiet, slid it under the ring.
What's it say?
Yeah,
we can't see it.
Okay,
you gotta make noise.
It says champagne. Oh man, you're making me read French words. This is not fair. It says vintage 2265. It's Monte Chardon Epernay, founded in 1745, Champagne, Cuvée Dom Perignon, vintage 2265 with a little star. So, yeah, nope.
Now,
you cannot retcon my movie.
In Earl Grey, right. We do actually use British accents when we speak French. That's how we do it, actually.
Okay. Well, I guess you can have your show back then. I'm obviously not qualified. Oh, no, wait, because that's free. That's original series scene, so it's okay.
Well, not
you
exactly.
Can take, you can take over standard over now.
I'm good.
To answer your question, I don't think it's ever addressed anywhere in Prime Trek, even after Generations came out. As far as I can remember, I don't think it's ever addressed that he died on Viridian, or that right. That's where he was, or whatever.
Oh, so like you don't hear like in Voyager where they're like, "Oh yeah, the Enterprise D crashed." Oh, that's the mission Jim Kirk died on. They don't.
Yeah,
say-
we never hear that. I don't think.
Well,
but even
yeah,
like it- even all throughout TNG, every time they reference him, it's like nebulous.
Yeah, the closest thing we have is Riker referencing the Enterprise B mission. That's what we get. We don't get anything else with the change after the Nexus.
Mm. We'll come back to that in when we get to the Viridian 3 part. But so no Spock, no Bones. Chekov and Scotty are brilliant. I mean, even with their both of them, why all the people with the fake accents? I don't know.
Well, like also one thing, like this is the only time, barring one exam or one other one, of when we see the press. Like, we've never seen press before.
Yeah,
the only other time would be Jake Sisko when he works for the Federation News Service in Deep Space Nine. But, like, man, they're obnoxious, and this is the only time we were seeing press ever in Star Trek.
Yeah, they don't really... Even when I was a kid watching that, I always thought, like, this does not work. I see what they're going for with their cameras and everything. It does not play well at all. And in terms of Chekov and Scotty, yeah, I mean, it wasn't until later on when Drew and I were talking about it, there were some things which I didn't even pick up on until Drew was mentioning like specific lines where it's like that's obviously something which was meant for Spock, and I mean, I knew the Chekov, as nurse thing or as doctor thing, that didn't make any sense. But beyond that, I mean, like, even as a kid, when I wasn't thinking about that and I didn't know the history of it, from a production standpoint, I did remember thinking, like, this is really weird. Why Scotty and Chekov? That is the most bizarro combination imaginable. Why would they do that? That doesn't make any sense at all. And still doesn't.
Well, now, would y'all have preferred the originally planned opening scene with Kirk space parachuting down?
No.
Star Trek 09ing is what the term is, yeah.
Yeah, that probably wouldn't have worked. I mean, I remember, I mean, I was one of them back in the day. I remember, like, fans at a convention were like, we need to see a director's cut, as we would call it, of this movie with all of this stuff cut back in. And then you hear about the scenes, and I think even, see them. Are they on the Blu-ray? I don't know. I don't know anymore about any of this stuff. I seem to remember seeing the scene, but I'm not going to attest to it. And it's like, wow, yeah, no, those were some really good edits. I'm really glad those scenes aren't in the movie,
No, I mean, I thought it was really interesting, though, because you even got a taste of Sulu, because you had Ensign Sulu. There, you did get some representation.
Yeah, the whole Enterprise B crew is like, hey, it's that guy.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
Tuvok. We've got Tuvok.
He just transferred over from the Excelsior.
We've got Aaron Pierce from 24.
Yep, Vasquez from Aliens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, also known as John Connor's foster mom.
Also known as that, and she was also the Irish immigrant in Titanic.
Yeah, that's true. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
She's good Jim Cameron.
Yeah.
He didn't do this movie. What is she doing in this movie?
Well, I think there's just a curse on the Excelsior class because you go from...
It's awful.
I mean, you look at the Excelsior when it's coming out of dry dock and it's got probably... I really don't want to swear, but like that captain is just the biggest jerk.
Captain Stiles.
So pompous,
yeah, Stiles.
Known to man. And then on the other end of the spectrum, we have the captain of the Enterprise B. And again, he's Mr. Oh, well, my dad got me this job. And it's really, really
so
apparent.
Why do you hate Captain Sulu, Darren? Would you explain to the Standard Orbit guys why you hate Captain Sulu?
Yeah.
Why did you skip? Why did you skip Sulu?
Well,
what's going on, man?
Well, Sulu almost loses the ship Because he's having tea.
Well, tear it apart then.
What? Oh, come on. It's not his fault. He's you know, having his tea Earl Grey hot.
Oh, wait, I'll say he's the exception to my previous statement.
It was Tuvok made tea, if we remember correctly.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I thought it was interesting that, you know, as y'all know, I'm not telling you anything you don't know, but, you know, the original plan was to have the whole cast there, and the whole cast just ends up at their old bridge station. But anyway, so it's just Chekhov, Kirk, and Scotty. But you still have Scotty getting to a station, which is cool, fine, whatever. But he's still transporting people from the bridge. I mean, I know we wanted Scotty to use the transporter, yeah. But I'm pretty sure that's not where the transporter station is.
And not only that, but he's transporting them from the bridge, but he's doing it from the side of the station that Tuvok is standing at. So he's just kind of pushing buttons, like
over the top of Tuvok. Like,
yeah,
no,
that,
no, let me do it.
If they would have done that, you know, had all seven of them on there and have them all take their stations where that would have been unforgivable. I mean, it would have been great to see them all, but that's ridiculous.
But then it would be it, and then Kirk's gone, and we're gonna fast forward to, you know, a boat in the water.
It's, hey, they're on a boat.
Everybody's gonna be like,
they're
what?
On a boat.
They're on a boat.
So you guys would. So what? Let me get this straight, because this is gonna blow my mind right now. You guys would not have wanted to see an entire cast crossover between the two.
Not series. The entire. It's not that they wouldn't cross over. That's the problem.
Yeah, that's true.
They would be near the same parts of the movie, but it wouldn't be a crossover.
Right. But I'm okay. So then, but in the ideal situation, you wouldn't even want to see the two series crossed over by obviously just Kirk or whatever. Or maybe
I mean,
Kirk's
McCoy's already been on the Enterprise D, so,
and Scotty,
you know, and Scotty, Spock. You know, and Spock. So we're already halfway there.
Now,
here's the thing about it, and maybe I'm jumping the gun here, but. The problem that I have with this movie and with this being a passing of the torch and with them feeling the need to kill off Kirk, sorry if I'm jumping ahead, but you know, it's...
No, this is fine.
Star Trek VI is the end of the original series. Star Trek VI is the best finale you could ever possibly ask for anything. And they said goodbye in the most beautiful way they could. And then to say, like, oh, and now they're all back. It's just like, and why? Wait, no, because you ended, and now you're starting up again? Don't do that. That's dumb. That's something that people do when they're desperate, you know? And Next Generation didn't need it, because they were going strong for 7 years, like someone was saying earlier, and there was no need for that. So as much as I love William Shatner and think that he should be in every movie ever made, and I'm never going to say don't put William Shatner in a movie, I think that it was... it's true. I think that it was a... I think that it in some ways taints the original series by having this be... goodbye again for what? I don't know why.
Well, I think you said it best in the beginning in your statement of, oh, look, it's the seventh film and it's transitioning after the show's been out for 7 years. Like, it doesn't need to transition. The torch has been passed. You're kind of like backtracking the torch and then refumbling it forward. It doesn't need to be.
They pass the torch in the pilot.
Yeah.
it's being passed for the movie audience. You know, there are people who probably didn't watch the show.
But then we're not getting a good torch passing because it's not an introduction to the Next Generation characters.
Yeah.
It's well, you already know all these people. Well, if I already knew all these people, I don't need Kirk to introduce me to these people.
It's for people like my Aunt Rita, who are big fans of the original crew. And you start off, you know, the cold open is like another movie from that franchise. You kill him, and then you say, okay, he's dead. Now you're going to have to deal with these people.
Okay, let me ask you guys, and I don't want to, I'm not trying to say whatever's better than whatever, but I mean...
Though he does do that.
Whatever.
I do that.
That's fine. Just do it. I'll say it.
I'm just saying, okay, so TNG reached an audience the original series never, ever did, size-wise.
That's I think that's not true.
TV audience.
Okay.
TV audience.
No,
really?
Totally
no.
I think that's wrong.
Is that
absolutely
not true?
not true at all.
Not according to the actual Nielsen ratings.
Is that true?
And not according to the fact that there were only three channels when original series was on.
Oh, okay, I see what you're saying.
And all the years of syndication.
Versus syndication and not knowing when it was going to be on and stuff.
Right, okay, I see what you're saying. All right, then let me rephrase what I'm going to say. So then let me just start from here. Are you guys saying that you don't think that it was necessary, even for the most casual of Star Trek fans, to have this torch passing event? Are you guys saying it would have been better off for both franchises if they let the TOS lie where it was in the undiscovered country, and they let TNG chart new waters,
if you will?
That's exactly what I'm saying.
Okay. Yeah, I totally agree.
So that you don't even start watching the movie until the 15-minute mark? Is that what you're saying?
I'm saying, like I said earlier,
the bottle in the ocean
would be so much better. The movie would be so much better if it didn't have the TOS elements, and I feel bad for saying that on my own TOS show.
No, I'm seeing the bottle because what you're doing, in the ocean, and then it hits the wooden ship, and it's the Enterprise.
No, it is okay for to say that on a TOS show, because what you're doing is you're protecting the TOS. You know, I mean,
the sanctity.
This is something that people never sort of think about when they think about how they want more stuff, which is like, more is not better. You know, I mean, brevity is the soul of wit. You know, you have as much as you need to have, and then you stop. That's why anytime I hear anyone talk about, and I hear Ira Stephen Bear talk about a Deep Space Nine movie, I think A, awesome, when are you going to release it? Because I need to see that. And B, wait, why are you doing that? Because that show ended, you know? And the original series ended, and I don't need this extra hanging thing just hanging off of it for no reason, you know?
Well, I feel like they wanted to actually give us closure on Kirk as a character. Like, we assumed that he died. I mean, obviously, you know, between six and the Next Generation, we assumed that he died. But I think that, like, RDM and them wanted to show us Kirk dying so that we get that sense of closure. But I don't like the way that he died. So I really would rather have that imaginary closure in my head.
Commandment of the, and I'm sort of making this up, but the great commandment of the TNG writers, like, okay, you can bring back anyone except Kirk. You can bring back anyone except Kirk. So we had, you know, Bones, we had Scotty, you know, we had Spock.
Was that a commandment though?
Well, I mean, they never touched it. They never ever touched it.
I think they wanted to make. He wrote a number down on a piece of paper, and it was like ridiculously large. And
I think that was Enterprise.
That was part of it, but I think it also got to a point where it was like, if you're going to do this, it's got to be the biggest thing ever, you know?
Like a
it's
movie.
But it wasn't. Spock.
Well, I mean, you could argue that it was, and you could argue that it was. I mean, that could be a failing of the movie. That could be, I don't know where to start. I don't know if I want to go down this road.
Every time that I watch Generations, I honestly forget that Kirk comes back. Like, I'll watch the movie and be like, okay, TNG, all right, in the Nexus. Wait, Kirk? Oh, yeah, that did happen at the beginning of this movie, didn't it?
Now, I'm curious, because Generations actually did add some storyline to Kirk, and I'm wondering what y'all, the Standard Orbit guys, y'all think of it. Because it's to me, it strikes me as odd, but maybe y'all think it makes sense. So basically, according to what we learn in Generations, Star Trek VI, Kirk, you know, retired or left Starfleet or whatever, and he apparently got bored, and he decided after meeting Antonia, you know what, I'm going back. And so he went back to Starfleet, apparently. And then he retired again. And so...
No.
Is that what happened? Or does it take... Or does, did he meet Antonia between Star Trek...
Well, because he said he...
Something, one and something. Two.
Because he said he went back to Starfleet. So when did he ever leave it?
I think...
Because he said the farm was only, like, what, 8 years ago, according to him? And he only...
That's true. He does specify dates.
So is he, like, the...
Where's the chronology?
I'm not the sports guy. Who's the quarterback that keeps coming back after retirement? Is that Jim Kirk?
Brett Favre.
Is Jim Kirk the Brett Favre of Starfleet?
Captain Kirk is the Brett Favre of Starfleet, although he's not a turncoat. Like, it's not like he's coming back to captain a Klingon ship, you know, or anything like
Let's
that.
Let's go Vikings! No, but it is, he does mention 7 years ago, the dog died. 9 years
Butler.
Ago was when he... was mm-hmm. when he was supposed to propose, but then ended up leaving or whatever. So
it probably was after Star Trek VI. Yeah.
So what did he do then? Where's that Lost Years book or comic?
He was chopping a lot of wood.
Yeah. A lot of
it's
wood.
A cold winter up there in Montana or wherever he was. I can't remember.
No, I meant when he went back to Starfleet. What was he doing in those 3 or 4 or 5 years?
I'm sure he'll write a book about it if he hasn't already, and I'm sure you'll be able to listen to it on audible.com.
Now, is that your next Dan fic?
No, I don't know enough about Kirk to do stuff about him, so.
I did want to bring up the Nexus and whether or not we were pleased with Kirk's dreams. Like, you'd think, you know, it does show the depth to Kirk that we know is there. It's not like, you know, Kirk is, you know, sleeping with green women and stuff and just like, why would I want to leave this Nexus? It's awesome.
I think the two of you should be the ones to answer. Like, what do you guys imagine? Like, let's, if we forget, and I know this is probably sacrilege, but if we forget movie Kirk, what do you think TV shows Kirk's next, that's a weird sentence, his Nexus would have been? Would it have just been on the bridge? Like, but that's what is
the TOS? It would be the TOS Enterprise.
Yeah.
That's where, if you want to bring the other characters back, don't bring them back in this pseudo opening, but bring them back in his Nexus.
Ooh.
And he's walking around. Ooh. And he's like, oh, Scotty, because, and then he forgets for a moment that this isn't real.
The gang's back together.
The gang's back together, yeah. Because he has his empty
forever.
House. And then
he just hacked that Gibson.
And then when he realizes it, that it's not true, they fade away and it's just Picard. And he's like, oh, like, I'm not a captain anymore.
It would have been so much more emotional, wouldn't it? Because we don't know Antonia. We don't care, right, about whoever this
woman
is.
Yeah, some lost love.
She looks a little young.
19 years late, Darren.
But if like, this
she
is
sleeps
like
in a barn. I mean, who would really... Love that.
if this is like him and his, you know, he's like seeing all of his friends and he's like, you know, they're in there, they're still, you know, fighting Kor or whatever, like, even though they're like 70, like that makes sense. And it would be emotional for him to come to the realization that even though this is where I'm happiest, I know this is not right. I know I have to leave. I know it's not real. So that's a great idea. Yeah. Darren, you literally just rewrote Generations better than the movie came out. So,
good job, Darren.
I'll be accepting my Oscar next year in the alternate reality Oscars.
In the JJ verse Oscars?
No.
Or is it the parallels?
Okay. No. Yeah, the parallels, so we'll call them.
Okay. So is this the one where you're married to Troy and Alexander doesn't exist? Sorry, I TNG referenced it. Sorry, I know it's TOS.
That's okay. We acknowledge that show.
Yeah. It was a thing that happened after our show.
It was
show,
a thing that happened.
It wasn't quite as successful. You know, the ratings just weren't there.
You know, one thing...
It didn't get nominated for any... Well, I guess it did get nominated for one Emmy. Yeah.
Well, one thing about... I think there's a... either intentionally...
Peabody, okay.
There's either an intentionally or unintentionally funny line. I can't figure out which. And that's the one where Picard chases after Kirk, and they're in the stables, and he's like, this isn't your bedroom. And Kirk's like, no, it's better. And I just like, everyone's like, what could be better than Jim Kirk's bedroom?
No,
know what I mean, ladies?
That's one of my favorite lines.
The way that it played in theaters, like, I remember the audience reaction at Hillside Square when I went to see it on, you know, the night before it came out, and the reaction the next night at Brickyard, and how they were both different because they were different types of fans, you know? But both times when he said, this is not your bedroom, that thing just killed, and you couldn't even hear him say, no, it's better. So I don't know. I don't even know if people would laugh at that in the theater, you know? I would. But the other thing that we have to keep in mind, and they've gone on record, you know, saying this, that, you know, the reason why it wasn't that, the reason why it wasn't what Darren was suggesting with them being on the bridge of the Enterprise is because when they were writing the episode, Ronald D. Moore and Brannon Braga were kind of thinking, what would William Shatner's nexus be? Because that's the only way we're going to get him to come back into this movie. And his nexus would be riding horses, which is why he's riding horses. So that's the real reason why it is the way it is. I'm sure right now Ron Moore is not listening to this, but if he were, he'd be like, I thought of that, Darren. I thought of that. But I knew that we would never get Shatner in the movie if that's what we had
he's
done.
We can, he can feel welcome right to...
Yeah, he could totally feel welcome to debate us on that point if he would like to join us on...
if he was a real man.
Have him on.
Are you calling RDM out?
Well, look, we'll provide the whiskey... As long as he wants to come on the show, it'll be lovely. But okay, so I mean, I don't know. Do you guys think Leonard Nimoy would have still refused to come on, even if they had him in like a token scene, like in Kirk's Nexuses as like the fake Spock, like not the real Spock? Would he have still been like, I'm not interested. I don't want to do it.
He might have done it just because he would have thought it was better written that way. But I mean, what the big rumor, and who knows how much of this is true, but the big rumor is that, you know, he was like, I'll do it if you let me direct it. And then he's like, I need to rewrite the script because it's really bad. And then they said, oh, no, we don't want the script rewritten. And then he said, okay, then I'm not going to do it. And then that was that. Something along those lines, right? I could be getting it wrong. I mean, maybe there was some Dom Perignon involved.
What he wanted to add was a bridge scene in the Nexus.
That could be, you know.
And instead we got a different bridge scene from the Nexus.
Oh, that wasn't in the Nexus though. That was after. That's post.
Maybe the whole thing was in the Nexus and they never left.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't like that idea.
Something
times
that's been discussed.
Reset.
Mm-hmm.
So Picard needs help defeating Malcolm McDowell. So he instead of, like, I don't know, finding anybody else, he finds Kirk. And what's Kirk supposed to do? Distract him. Just go over here and distract
him. How about he distracts him with a phaser? Because that would have helped a lot.
So, again, not to TNG-centric this, but if we're going to talk Picard, Kirk, in the final scene with Saurus.
We'll get into it.
No, look. Picard is so wussified in this movie. Look, Soren beats the bejesus out of him, and then Kirk lands every single punch with Soren. I'm like, yeah, thanks for the contrast. I've seen Picard beat up a Nausicaan on TNG, okay? Don't try to be like...
Yeah, the only problem I have, and I agree with you, but it's just like, yeah, Picard gets beaten up, and then like... And rewatching it yesterday, this really stood out to me, is like, Kirk's fight scene with Soren is super Kirk. Like, it's like very like... Yeah, like it's very like, you know what I mean, like very TOS, very slow, and like he's still pulling the same moves, except he's like 40 years older and you know 60 pounds heavier, and it's like this
double fisted
look...
blow to the lower back, karate like, chop to the shoulder.
I have no problem at, like, saying fine, Kirk can be the better fighter even in his advanced age. That doesn't bother me one bit, but it's just like it just looks ridiculous to me. Anyway, maybe not to you guys.
Well,
I think
you had to have him do that. If you're gonna have a Kirk fight scene, you're gonna have to, ooh, yeah, you know, you just have to do that, and it has to be in the desert with rocks behind him.
I was gonna say you could like Photoshop the Gorn in there, and that would still be a perfect fight for Kirk to do. I think it would work just fine.
Now, have you all seen the much, you know, whatever original? And I have not. The original. And y'all know this. I don't tell anything you don't know. You know, the original thing was like the Kirk got shot in the back or whatever, and then they had to reshoot the ending because obviously everyone hated that. And that we got what
I actually it's on the Blu-ray or the DVD or something. I actually prefer the getting shot to the falling off a bridge kind of thing.
Technically, the bridge fell with him.
It just seems more dramatic.
This debate is something that, you know, I've heard a million times and never once has interested me, because I don't care how Kirk died. I really don't. You know, I mean, people are like, it's not heroic enough of a death for him. What does that even mean? I don't know how to even have that discussion.
He's got two machine guns in his hands as he's going down.
Right, exactly. What do you want him to do?
Riding a dinosaur.
He dies because... Right, exactly. And then he dies because, you know, some... I mean, that doesn't make any sense to me. You know, that is just... That is essentially what you're doing, is you're saying, like, we need closure. We need to show him die. It needs to be a heroic death. No, it doesn't. You can have him, say, second star to the right and straight on till morning, and then, or is it left? I forget, one way or the other. And then, you know, have him do his thing, and that's it. That's all you need. And this thing, you know, the debate between whether or not he should have died by getting shot in the back or falling, you know, off of, you know, like a freak sledding accident or whatever you want to call it. It's
Sonny Bonoing.
It's right. You know, you don't. It's a dumb argument because it doesn't matter. The point is, it's dumb that we're even having this discussion. You know, we should not be seeing him die. We should not see him die here because there's no reason to. It offers nothing to this movie, to that character, to the franchise. Nothing.
Now there is a certain, I mean, for very, and I don't know if y'all agree with this. Y'all tell me. There is a certain poeticness because he predicted this. He said, I know I'll die when I die alone. And
no, he said...
And he was alone, because there was no Kirk. There was no Spock. There was no McCoy. It was just
there
him.
There was Picard sitting right
there.
Picard,
but that wasn't, nobody? That wasn't...
Is that what you're
well,
saying?
That wasn't his Picard, friend.
Nobody? He's saying that his captain is
wasn't his family.
Yeah. Well, okay.
His friends are family.
Wait, hang on. Yeah, we're not talking... I assume when he says, I'm dying alone, he doesn't literally mean he's dying, like... by himself in the vacuum of space with nobody within a light year of him. Like, I would, when he says I'm dying alone, I die with no one that cares about me around me, which is what happens. I mean, that is true, right? That's what I thought.
Picard just uses him as a distraction, so he just obviously doesn't care about
I thought Kirk was inferring
you're already
that
dead, who cares?
He knew he would die alone because when he's with his friends, he can accomplish anything and he won't die.
That's right. It's right. Spock's fault that he died. There, I said it.
Yeah, you know, I mean, whatever, it is what it is. Did he die alone? Did he not die alone?
We
I
need
know.
Star Trek oh, 5 to have some sort of relevance. Come on.
It has relevance.
Does it?
It started the career of David Lowery, who would go on to write Obsession, Lakeview Terrace, Nurse 3D.
Also, there are cat women in that mm-hmm. film, and there are cat women in Into Darkness. So that's all I care about.
And let's not forget that it was also the inspiration for the opening of Mission Impossible 2, which was obviously ripped off from the opening of Star Trek V, The Final Frontier. And there's that. Right.
I remember when Kirk threw those exploding sunglasses at his screen.
I am going to watch mm-hmm. that Star Trek V version. I would watch that.
also, Star Trek V, The Final Frontier, I don't care how bad it is, how good it is, how worthy it is, how long it is, whatever, it is all worth it just for that press conference, which is on the DVD right there. That makes the whole production worthwhile, because that press conference is amazing.
And also the Why is the Captain Kirk Climbing a Mountain video. YouTube it.
Yes. Where Shatner just talks for like 20 minutes about, I like rocks.
Because he's in love.
All right, gentlemen. Thank you for joining us here on Standard Orbit, where we talked about TOS side of Generations. And be sure to join us. When does the new episode get installed?
It doesn't arrive until Tuesday.
So be sure to tune in on for Earl Grey for part two, where we talk about it from a TNG point of view. Until then, we'll catch you then. Well, that was a great conversation with the guys from Earl Grey.
Yeah, I always love talking about Generations, and it's good to talk about it with some fellow fans.
Yes, and be sure to stay tuned for Tuesday's episode of Earl Grey, where we continue the conversation and look at it from more of a TNG point of view. We forgot to ask them where they were from, so our listeners won't pay any attention to them. But
yeah, well, we know they're on a show called Earl Grey.
Yes,
which is
it's
on
a TNG show,
Trek.fm, And
we also know that they're on Twitter.
They are on Twitter.
You can find Philip Gilfus at NC Public Servant. You can find Darren Mosier at Dr. Sci-Fi. And you can find Daniel Prue at 1UP Dan. That's the number one, like a 1UP in Mario Brothers.
There you go.
Well, Generations is just one of the things, well, two of the things that we're talking about on Trek FM this week. So here's a quick look at what you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
The unmade Starfleet Academy movie.
You know, even on paper. Okay, do we want to do the script, which was written by the guy who wrote Star Trek V, or do we want to do the script, which was written by the guy who wrote Star Trek II?
Earl Grey.
The ships of TNG.
Oh, no, it's one ship that splits into three parts, just like the D is one ship that splits into two parts. It's not a Voltron. It's one ship.
An owl formed the saucer.
The orb.
Dr. Bashir, I presume commentary.
I know. It's just a hostile. The look on Sisko's face the whole time, he's just looking at Zimmerman like, all right, you're a piece of work, aren't you?
Exactly.
To the journey!
Seska.
And obviously, Seska couldn't let go, and she proved that by having his child against his will.
Yeah. Now, here is the Maury Show twist of the future. He does not impregnate her. She impregnates herself with his DNA, or so she thought. But he is not the father.
The Ready Room.
Thank you.
But it's also really gloomy, and it's I never want to go back there. I don't want to, like, re-experience that. Like, just the visual candy of being able to go outside and talk to the Vorta. And, wow, I maybe didn't phrase that properly. I meant the change in color and lighting.
Oh.
I did not mean – but she's a very
I thought you were
Vorta.
Talking about Kimana.
She is fetching. No? She's a fetching lass.
Warp 5.
Zindi Evolution.
Well, I think maybe Okapa and Insectoid are two races that could have a life together. You know, you've got the 9-year lifespan of the Okapa, you've got the 12-year lifespan of an Insectoid. If they meet at the right time, it could be a beautiful love story.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
Iris Stephen Bear's Star Trek.
And it's the first time I heard him say something that he said several times over the years is, you know, one day when we're not the middle child, we're not the stepchild, people are going to go, holy crap, look at DS9.
Literary Treks.
Slings and Arrows, A Sea of Troubles.
You see in this book, too, that Picard is facing this melancholy because they've been worried about the Borg, and now the Dominion is on the horizon, and there's these two things, and obviously this is before First Contact, so that hasn't happened yet. And Picard seems to be kind of weighed down in this story in some ways.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out these other shows and get in on the daily Trek Talk. You'll find them on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Windows Phone, Xbox, Zune, or you can stream and download files from the website. Just visit trek.fm/pd for podcast directory to get all the links. If you'd like to share your thoughts with us on Star Trek Generations or anything else Star Trek related, you can go to trek.fm/contact. There's a form there. Choose to send a show and choose Standard Orbit. That'll come to both of us by email. You can also use the tab on the right-hand side of any page to send us a voicemail using a webcam's microphone, and you can talk to us and other listeners in our forums at trek.fm/forums. In social media, you'll find us on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm and on Twitter under username trekfm. Heard any good books lately?
Well, I haven't, but I'll tell you what I want to hear is the adaptation of Star Trek Generations, which was done by J.M. Dillard and is narrated by John DeLancey over on Audible.com.
Now that sounds incredible.
Yeah. Now, I got the hardcover book, the original printing of the novelization back when I was a kid, right when the movie came out. And the only two things that I remember about it, three things that I remember about it. One, it had the original ending where Kirk gets shot in the back, you know?
Right.
And that seemed really interesting, you know, to me. I think later versions had the revised ending, but so I don't know. I'm guessing because of production time.
Revisionist booking. Interesting.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm not sure, but I mean, I don't know which version this has, but I'm very curious to see. The other thing that I remember is it had some amazing pictures in it, which I'm assuming aren't in the audiobook, but you never know. You never know, right? And I also remember, for whatever reason, that J.M. Dillard, the reason why she uses J.M. is because it is an homage to one of her idols, D.C. Fontana. So there's a TOS connection for you as well. But what I'm most curious about this book is whether or not at the beginning they say the champagne is from Chateau Picard. There's got to be a reason why I thought that, and I got to think this is it. Either that or the comic book adaptation. I'm not sure, but I'm going to find out. I'm going to go to audible.com, and I'm going to sign up for a free trial so that I can download this book for free and listen to it and make sure that I'm not insane.
The sample is the beginning of the book, but it begins, I listened to the sample this morning, it begins with Kirk in his quarters on the Enterprise A, like the last day before everybody has to leave, and he gets a call from Carol Marcus, who's still injured from the attack from the novelization in Star Trek VI that we talked about last week.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Continuity between novelizations. Now, that's impressive.
That is impressive. Yeah.
So it's like their own little continuity out there, the novelizations.
I like that.
I think that's really great.
Yeah. Someday we'll have to talk about the Star Trek IV novelization and how Spock gets drunk on peppermint patties.
Yeah, I've heard about that.
Yeah.
You can pick up Generations on Audible. Audible's a great way for you to read all the books you've always wanted to read but never thought you'd have time for. Audible is the premier source for audiobooks with more than 150,000 titles to choose from and new titles coming every week. From classics to bestsellers, Audible has something for everyone. As a Trek FM listener, you can get a free audiobook of your choice along with a 30-day trial just to see how great Audible is. So give it a try today, catch up on all those classic books you've yet to read or that latest novel from your favorite author as well. Just go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up today. Again, that's audibletrial.com/trekfm, and we thank you and Audible for supporting Standard Orbit and Trek FM. If you'd like to personally support Standard Orbit, the network, and our programming, visit trek.fm/donate. We have 8 alien-themed badges and art prints as a thank you for your contribution. You can mix and match badges and art prints. There are different levels of donation to choose from, and your contributions help us cover the cost of production, storage, and bandwidth needed to bring Standard Orbit and our other shows to you every week. So, Mike, that was Generations from a TOS point of view. I can't wait for everybody to hear the second part, which will be installed on Tuesday.
Yes, it will. The Earl Grey half will focus on Next Generation, and you can find that right here on Trek.fm. So check it out. Sure to be fun times.
Indeed. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Have a good week and keep on trekking. It is the will of Landru.
Mr. Chekov, take us out of orbit. Ahead, warp factor 1.
Thanks, sir.